I have a phrase. This time around, we're all Jewish. The Rockefellers were one of the richest families in history. They monopolized the oil, Standard Oil was their company. And they were huge proponents of eugenics. It started with the funding of Margaret Sanger's initiatives. She's the founder of Birth Control Review. She was a huge advocate for forced sterilization, abortions, and prophylactic measures, which later she was the founder of Planned Parenthood. Rockefeller was the number one financier of eugenics research for Nazi Germany, as well as in America. In 1910, slightly unrelated, but it'll show you a pattern of behavior. Rockefeller sent an army of propagandists to every single medical school in the country. And their objective was to bribe the administration of every single medical school to affect the thought patterns and prescription patterns of the new doctors that were being graduated. And away from traditional methods that had millennia of thousands of years of collective experience, to only pharmaceutical, big pharma products. By the way, at that time, all big pharma products were petroleum-based, which Standard Oil was had the monopoly for petroleum. When it became obvious that petroleum-based pharmaceuticals were causing cancer, Rockefeller founded the American Cancer Society and covered up on that little phenomenon. Rockefeller owned, or was a majority owner, of IG Farben. IG Farben made Zyklon B gas. Was used to gas people in Nazi gas chambers. Jews, gypsies, Slavs, handicapped people, political prisoners. Mostly Jews, though. And Rockefeller also owns the company that makes RU486, which is the morning after abortion pill. So if you notice, everything that family, every initiative of that family has a theme of annihilation of human beings. The reason why I pick on this one family, because now you still have the Rockefeller Foundation and they still do their crazy research. And one of the accessories to this genocide, Dr. Rick Bright, who sabotaged President Trump's order to make hydroxychloroquine available to every American through the national stockpile of medicine. He literally sabotaged that and was fired for insubordination. Now works as a director at the Rockefeller Foundation. So there's a theme, okay? The theme is that this family and many families like them are demonic at best. They view the rest of us as a resource, an expendable resource, and useless eaters. You know, Elon Musk a year ago debuted his humanoid robots, and during that presentation he said the following verbatim, that these robots will replace 90% of the human workforce, therefore we need universal basic income. So let me tell you what that universal basic income list is. You think the degenerates that don't value life, who view us as vermin, want to give away free money to useless eaters? What that universal basic income list is a future extermination list. And so in their mindset, and this is confirmed by the Georgia Guidestones, if you look at one of their principles, is that the world population should be no more than 500 million. It's a reduction of 90%. They want to reduce the world population by 90% because the rest of us are just carbon emitters, have no value, no intrinsic divinity. And if we don't serve a purpose, then we should be liquidated. I mean, literally liquidated, turned into fuel or whatever. This is what they envision. This is what they want. This is what they say. We grew up here in America in this kind of bubble of American exceptionalism and elitism. And can't happen here. And it's exactly happening here, right in front of our eyes, and we're too complacent to do anything about it. What children are being exposed to right now are these like non-binary blue-haired Peter Pans, and they're being told that that's normal. Listen, I don't care what these people do. Let them live any way they want, but stay the hell away from my kids. Your choices are yours, but do not impose your perversions that most people don't agree with on others. And what's happened is we've normalized debauchery. We've normalized perversion. That's a very effective way, and this was done by design, to demoralize a society. And when a society is demoralized, they're too stupid to recognize what's being done to them.
So I have a degree in biochemistry and toxicology. I have a PhD in respiratory pharmacology, so the study of drugs on respiration of mammals. And then I worked for 32 years in broadly in biopharmaceutical R&D. So I'm a research guy. And I was, until 2011, I was head of worldwide research for Pfizer's allergen respiratory group. So it was my job, anywhere between idea all the way up to proof of concept in patients. That was my job. That was my span of control. And I left in 2011 because they left the UK. It was shrinking and moving back to the US. There's a nasty pandemic, so lockdown and wait for a vaccine. That's the wrong strategy. What you need to do is provide maximum protection, social, immunological, good diet. And then if people get sick, treat them symptomatically with cheap, well-understood anti-inflammatories, antivirals, anticoagulants, like Pierre Corey, Pete McCulloch, Zelenko, and others have done. So that's what we should have done. The elderly who are most vulnerable are vulnerable because their immune systems don't respond well to new threats. I'm sorry, they're also the people who don't respond well to injected vaccines, and that fits the data as well, that the vaccines don't seem to do anything useful at all, and we can come back to their danger. This fraud, for me, can be divided into three easily digested chunks. The first one is an exaggerated threat. So we were told there was a new coronavirus that had emerged in China and was spreading around the world, but here's the key thing: they told us it was sort of really super lethal. Much, much worse than anything we've seen before, perhaps as bad as 1918. Well, it turns out now that however you analyze the data, the threat does not seem to be exceptional. Perhaps in some places a little worse than a bad seasonal influenza. You wouldn't shut the world down for this. So exaggerated threat, why? To make you frightened. The drive, fear. But then the next chunk I would describe as useless and injurious measures. So lockdown, masking, social distancing, business closures, school closures, border restrictions, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I know, because I understand a little about what we think of disease transmission, how that works, that none of them could have worked. And even if I'm completely wrong, ignore what I think, the literature is very clear now, the scientific literature, lockdowns have didn't save a single life. But lockdowns smashed the modern world, absolutely eviscerated sort of middle class businesses, small and medium sized enterprises. And I believe that was deliberate. I think that's part of the Great Reset. But long and short of it is, all of the measures imposed, including lockdowns and masks, did not, and they knew could not do anything useful whatsoever. People who are without symptoms, for example, you can't infect another person. So, you know, this idea that separating everybody from everybody else is utter nonsense. You know, even TV personalities must know what I just said is true. You know, if you are completely well and lacking the symptoms, you can't blow a disease you haven't got onto someone else. Come on. You know, so no, you don't need to stay away from someone else. You never needed to. It was a lie. It was to segregate people. Why? Because people converse with each other. They get close and say, what do you think about this? And people would work it out. They knew if they didn't separate people in the first few weeks, they'd probably crack it. And they would have done. Remember, influenza, Rira, went away. I'm not saying that the tests failed to distinguish them and really it was flu in disguise. I don't know. But the all-cause mortality does not give you to believe the original concept, which is there's such a high threat to the lives of the population that anything is justified, everything is justified. That's not true. There are literally scores of peer-reviewed journal articles that compare communities where lockdown was applied or not, or applied very rigorously versus not, so what's called stringency of lockdown. There is not the slightest connection. You would think if it works, the more rigorously it was applied, the lower the number of deaths. Not so. The more rigorously it's applied, actually, the more the deaths, as you would really expect if you think how essential interactions are between families and people in their community to their health. When you lock them away, they die. So they lied about the measure, about the threat to make you frightened, and then they imposed all sorts of anti-human measures that did not work. And they knew they did not. The WHO, 6 months earlier, had reviewed all of these non-pharmaceutical interventions. That you can find that report, it's over 100 pages long. And all the member states from WHO had a copy. So all their public health people knew that what I've just said is true, and yet they applied them. And despite then further research emerging during the summer of 2020, goddammit, but they put lockdown on again in the autumn and winter. So no, these were deliberately injurious measures that didn't work, and they knew they didn't work. And when people like me would point out scientific papers that had been published, we were smeared, called conspiracy theorists, and we were censored and pushed even off the internet. A finance expert, Catherine Austin Fitz, she said, it's not a turndown. She said, it's a takedown. It's a planned takedown. Absolutely. And that's what it is. People think, when they hear Moss, they think filter. Yes. But he said, but they've never been filters. They're the medical mask, he said, is a splash guard. They're worn across the nose and mouth so that when a member of medical staff attends an ill or injured person, there won't be a splash of bodily fluids or blood or pus into their nose and mouth. Often they also wear goggles because your eye is a portal for entry for organisms. Yeah. That's why they wear them, folks. They do not, repeat, not wear them so they can filter anything in their airway or out. And even if that happened, where the hell is the stuff that they've filtered? I mean, sitting in the plastic? People are touching them all the time. I'm afraid the masks you wear, they are not filters, not filters. They don't filter anything in your airway. But at most, they are splash guards. And I'm afraid people who wear fabric masks all day, day after day after day, not that surprising. It's equivalent to wearing filthy underwear. It literally becomes like a Petri dish. And it will grow bacteria, fungi. And guess what? You breathe them into your airway. And if you're unlucky, they stick. The third phase we're in at the moment is superfluous, ineffective, and toxic so-called vaccines. Ineffective, superfluous, you don't need them, toxic vaccines. And also, you know, these people are making, you know, like $100 billion out of you.
Hello, my name's Andrew Barr, and I'm an historian, a social historian. So I feel I have a role to try and reintroduce some kind of historical perspective and historical methodology into what the freedom movement is doing. And the Jews for Justice came out of that, I think, really. It was obvious to me from, probably not from the beginning, but from quite early on, that the whole coronavirus panic, let's call it that, was another Reichstag fire. What matters is the response to it. And immediately I thought, right, it's a Reichstag fire in the sense that it's a power grab. It's an excuse for governments to accrue to themselves powers they never had the opportunity to do so before. And I think I was quite naive. I think a lot of us were naive in the spring of 2020 and didn't realize that this was part of a whole process that had been going on for decades. I mean, some people would say for longer than that, but certainly for decades, since I've been looking back at a lot of these false flag mass shooting incidents, how many of these are similarly designed to take away powers from the public, complete powers of the government. So my thinking was to start Jews for Justice, and we will talk about the Nuremberg Code. We will talk about the similarities with what has been happening, and particularly the othering of the unvaccinated, with the treatment of the Jews in Nazi Germany. And the only people who can tell us to shut up are other Jews, and then we would have a debate. There are a lot of conservative Christians who have resisted. There are a lot of conservative Muslims who have resisted here. We're all Abrahamic religions, and we all believe in the same God, and we're all opposed to the same crime for similar reasons. I mean, here in Britain, COVID was basically announced over on February 23rd, when the Prime Minister lifted all the restrictions suddenly out of the blue. The war in Ukraine started on February 24th, an amazing coincidence. I mean, my view on COVID policy tends to be it was a massive compliance test. Lockdowns were a compliance test.
Yep.
Testing was a compliance test. Masks were compliance tests. The injections were compliance tests. It's all about conditioning the population to accept, to allow the government to do things to them they would not previously have accepted. And having pushed them so far, the government can take a step back, but they can do it again.
Yes.
They've set the principle. That's the scary thing. Not that it will necessarily happen over another disease, but the principle of forcing people to do whatever they want them to do is established. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen, but there's an attack on, a legal attack now, on homeschooling in Britain to try and make it much, much more difficult for people to homeschool, because increasingly, especially Christians, are wanting to homeschool their children. And the state is trying to introduce legislation that will give it a much greater measure of control over the homeschooling of children. The food shortages, the possible fuel shortages, what they call now the cost of living crisis, which is, of course, a cost of lockdown crisis. But this is a long war. I mean, a lot of our groups have got burnt out. As soon as the measures were relaxed at the start of this year, and you've got to replenish your energies because it's a long, long fight. COVID is the culmination of the process.
Yes.
I mean, what was most interesting for me about reading Bobby Kennedy's book about the real Anthony Fauci was his dissection of the whole aid fraud and how it is exactly the same as the COVID fraud. And there was a big scandal about the MMR vaccine here in the UK, and particularly Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who simply questioned whether there was a possibility it was linked with autism, and Big Pharma went out of his way to destroy him. And there's been a sequence of similar vaccine scandals. Yeah. There's been a huge suppressed scandal about the HPV vaccine, which is supposed to prevent cervical cancer. About all the teenage girls whose lives have been destroyed because they were given the HPV vaccine. So the COVID vaccine is merely a culmination of a process, but it's affected a much bigger number of people. And to the fact that Big Pharma has no interest in your health whatsoever. A lot of people have lost confidence in the medical profession completely, as well as obviously in the media completely. Israel has a long history of selling its people to United States drug companies and United States pharmaceutical complex to be experimented upon. There's the ringworm scandal, which involved the exposure of Sephardic Jews to massive doses of radiation, supposedly to treat ringworm, but actually an experiment to see what level of radiation they would tolerate. In the 1950s, which was at a time when Israel was an incredibly poor country and The US gave them several times their annual budget in order to put the Sephardic Jews through this horrendous experiment. I don't know if you've had the same reports in the US, but the British mainstream media has been reporting this new phenomenon of sudden adult death syndrome.
Yes, certainly.
The inexplicable phenomenon of adults suddenly dropping dead. What could possibly be causing it? They've no idea.
Yeah,
and they've said it needs to be investigated. But I bet there's one cause that won't be investigated, like the fact that when they were supposedly closing down the whole country in the spring of 2020 to protect all the old people, actually they were murdering all the old people by giving them midazolam and morphine. Sudden infant death syndrome, which was directly linked to vaccines that were much less dangerous and did have some benefit to them, we believed, through a process of vaccines that clearly were quite dangerous for babies, to a vaccine that has no benefit for babies and can only cause harm. But it's the culmination of a process. It's not out of the blue. And people like Andrew Wakefield, who stood up, they had their lives and careers destroyed by Big Pharma. The destruction of Andrew Wakefield was the same message as the murder of JFK. It was saying, you're not allowed to do what you're doing. We are your boss. We tell you what you're permitted to do. If you're US president, you're not permitted to go against the military-industrial complex. If you're a doctor, you're not permitted to speak out against vaccines.
So here's the theory behind vaccines, and it's, I'm going to present you with a piece of, or a dead version of, the thing that we're worried about, the pathogen, the disease-causing agent. I'm going to give you either, you know, a dead version of it, a weakened version of it, maybe just a piece of it. I'll just give you one of its arms or its legs, and your immune system is going to train on that, and you'll recognize that as foreign and mounts an immune response, and you'll memorize that. You have an immune memory. That's the basic principle. You can break the virus down into maybe six or seven like little building blocks. If you had them in front of you on the table, all these pieces of the pathogen, presumably dead, and you said, what are the characteristics that you want before you kind of reach for one of these pieces? I would say you'd probably agree with this. Don't pick a piece of it that on its own is toxic. The only one that produces strong unwanted effects in all species tested, the spike protein. It's really bad. It has neurological adverse consequences. It can trigger platelet activation that can lead to blood clotting and numerous other things. Guess which one they picked? Spike protein. And then all four companies picked spike protein. If you and I were running kind of competing brainstorming sessions in different parts of the company as to how to design this vaccine, you and I cannot believe either of us would leave that meeting, those meeting rooms, with spike protein as the answer. I'm sure you would say, don't pick something which, when expressed in the human body, could cause toxicity. Four companies picked the wrong, in my view, the wrong answer, the antithetical answer to safety every time. And I'm afraid, guys and girls, it's not luck. You're not stupid. It's deliberate. I think it's coordinated, and it's malfeasance.
Yeah.
You must know what you've done is wrong. You must know. Pete McCulloch taught me this. He said, with any public health measure, the first concern is not effectiveness, it's safety.
Yes.
And that's because you're going to expose potentially billions of people. You must be sure you do no harm. And so if Mr. Gates says, next time we'll have a vaccine in 90 days, I have another problem. And it comes back now into my domain as a drug discovery and R&D. Well, I have to tell you, in order, if you want, say, 1 year safety data, so you inject a person and you follow them for a year to check their arms and legs don't fall off, anything bad happen, well, that means you need an elapsed year after the last person you dosed. Well, that's probably a two-year study, and then you need a year of preclinical studies minimum, and you need a year of manufacturing. 4 years, absolute minimum. You cannot make it shorter. And yet, what have we got? 2.5 months of safety data. So, if really bad things happen, people listening, if really bad things were to happen, say, 6 months after dosing, none of the manufacturers know that. They don't have the data. No one has the data. And there's no good saying, well, we've dosed people, so we would know. Unless you formally study something, you can miss something like thalidomide. You can miss thalidomide for 4 years until someone started saying, I've seen a case like this, and it took 4 years before people realized that a birth malforming agent like thalidomide was doing what it was doing. It's not obvious if you're not looking, and you'll never see it if you're deliberately not looking, which is where we are now. So the first reason, vaccines are no good because they won't work for the targeted population. And we've got evidence of that from flu vaccine failures, and it won't work on safety because here's the key point, the time taken to conceive, develop, manufacture and provide the vaccine to the people is longer than any plausible duration of a natural pandemic. It will be over long before you get there with your wonderful product. So if they bring it early, then they have not got the safety data. You'd be crazy to take this. And that what's worse in this case is these are new types of medical intervention. We've never done this in people. A few cancer patients maybe in research. No one has ever, they've never blazed away at the whole population with the gene-based materials like this. We've no idea what's going to happen. I've been around the industry for over 30 years. And as a result, I personally know three of the four main vaccine companies, I know the person in charge of it from the research side. So in Johnson & Johnson, a guy called Dr. Matai Mammen. Hello, Matai. It's about time you confessed or resigned or debated me. Because you can't hide behind the idea that the things I've just discussed with Vera are not correct. So, and you are responsible for this, your vaccine, and it's harming people, it's killing people. And then in AstraZeneca, Sir Menelaus Pangalos, or Meni Pangalos. Hello, Meni. We used to work at Pfizer together a while ago, and you seemed a reasonable guy. What the hell are you doing? Your company is manufacturing, again, a badly tested, appallingly conceived, inappropriate human experiment that breaches the Nuremberg Code like the others, and it's time you resigned, confessed, debated, or sued me. You can't do none of the things, given I'm telling you, you are in charge of criminal activity. You've got to do one of the four things I just said, or you're a coward. And then what have we got? Within my former employer, Pfizer, with whom I left on very good terms. I loved working at Pfizer. So hello, Dr. James Merson. He was in the next office to me for years. He is now Senior Vice President and Head of Vaccines Research. So I think his job title means he's either responsible or the person who is reports to him, something like that. So James, it's about time you resigned, confessed, debated me or sued me. You can't do none of the four because every listener knows that what I'm saying is true. You know what? A lie hates being challenged. A truth does not mind being questioned, right? So let the public decide based on the fact I don't mind being questioned and you lot do, who's lying and who's telling the truth. Anyone who knows me, if you are working in any of those companies, and you cannot rebut everything I'm saying, you need to resign, or because you are otherwise part of this. If enough of you resigned in one go, it would end it, right? You could save the world. If 10 senior executives from R&D, from any of these companies, put together an open letter, three paragraphs, and resigned, you'd end it.
We're 7.5 billion. They are maybe, what, 500, 2,000? How many? How many oligarchs are there? Uh-uh. We have the power. We just don't have the wherewithal. We're not awake. We need to follow the example of the truckers, the Canadian truckers, and then the American truckers. We need to take back our rights, our freedom, our democracy. Instead, we have sat back and kind of let them decide. And that has led to us losing total control to the point where very few believe in election results even. There's a reason for that. We've lost control of our government, and in so doing, we lose our say as a society. Right now, they're pushing the single monetary, digital monetary, to replace cash. That's an extreme. That and the digital ID are the two methods to push everyone into dictatorship and into slavery, personal slavery. If we go with those two things, then it's lost. There's a reason why, for example, the European Union didn't work. Everyone thought, oh, this is going to keep people out of war. Yeah. But those were small wars compared to this. When you give global control to a group, they can destroy most of the world if they sort of have a whim, even, because they're not accountable in any way. They launched these injections before they really tested them. So they needed to do a lot more tests, and that's where the masses have become the guinea pigs in a huge experiment within which they're testing a lot more. They're testing doses to determine what dose kills in 2 weeks, in 2 years. They want to spread that so that people don't immediately recognize that it's a genocidal weapon, but it is. They're merely trying to perfect the time span of scheduling, also how many shots, what combinations to have in the shots. There's a reason why the FDA asked for a 75-year silence on disclosing to the public the documents that they themselves received from Pfizer. Pfizer disclosed to the FDA all kinds of facts. It's the FDA that sealed everything. It's a man-made weapon to change society totally. And they have a name for it, the Great Reset, the New World Order. Nobody asked us whether we want to change our world. And when others do it for us, it often is catastrophic.
My name is Kevin Jenkins. I am now presently the co-chair of Dr. Zelenko's foundation, the Zelenko Foundation. I am truly fighting the oligarchs because I understand their scheme, I understand their plan, I understand what they're committed to doing. And it's real simple. It is to wipe out humanity. It's about power and control. And all of these corporations and these agencies have lined up now. They all have been captured. And they have lined up now to eviscerate mankind. This fight is the fight. And it's time for us to go out here and fight for our children, because I think that's the most important thing. Leaving a place where they can be free and they can understand that their body sovereignty and their right to choose and my body, my choice. We have to stop this evil industry, Big Pharma. Now we have to stop this evil industry and their co-partners, the monetary system and the big tech. So we got our work cut out for us. We've been lied to. We will not be commoditized. We will fight back against this global slavery. We will continue to keep educating people. We are going to fight for our children and fight for this land and fight for, you know, this country. It's easy for me to say because I'm a Black American and I understand slavery, but having a deeper understanding of history allowed me to see it quicker. So now, you know, with having that context, that's what linked me to my new tribe. That's what got me to look a little deeper. You know, moving from eugenics, moving from Margaret Sanger, moving what Bill Gates has done in Africa, looking at all of the colonialization that continues to happen, looking at the present condition of the Black community now, which is even worse than it was in the 1930s. Stop worrying about the barbarian at the gate and worry about the barbarian inside the gate. How did we become the most chronically ill people on the planet? How did we become the most miseducated people on the planet? How did we find ourselves in this place in the 21st century? If you look at what's happening in all of the systems at the municipal and state level, you have legislators today that are voting to take not only your religious freedoms away from you and your medical freedoms away from you, but the very power you have over your body by siding with an industry that only wants to commoditize our bodies. I call it the slave passport. You know, I've been calling it the slave passport from the beginning. Because think about this. Just think about this. 58 some odd years ago, maybe 60 years ago, I couldn't go into a shop because they said I was unclean. I had to sit in back of the bus because they said I was unclean. I couldn't go to certain schools because they said I was unclean. I couldn't even marry a white woman because they said I was unclean. I couldn't travel and stay at hotels or lodgings because they said I was unclean. Something was wrong with me. And to even walk off a plantation, I had to have papers from my master. And you have black Americans walking around here using a slave passport, giving up their freedom, forgetting their history, to go into a shop that has told them, you are dirty, you are unclean. Could you imagine that? I never thought in a million years that I would see people take out of their pocket their phone to qualify to these demons, qualify to these lizards, qualify to these people that I'm clean. See, I'm clean. I can come in here because I took your experimental biology. Are you kidding me? So think about the Jewish community, the black community, people that lived in communist Russia, people that lived all over the world. Think about how they have really forgotten the horrors that their ancestors have gone through, their ancestors went through, by giving up their bodies and giving up their freedom just to say, look at me, I'm clean. I mean, it's heartbreaking. I've seen America, I've talked to America, the heartland, you know, the suburban communities, rural communities. I was there. I'm talking to these people, and nobody's talking about race. They're talking about how do we free our minds and our bodies from these global tyrants? How can we work together? Because they're coming after all of us up here in front of my mind that, you know, 60 some odd years ago, you know, in Nazi Germany, they were killing Jewish people. Right now, and right here in front of my mind, in Africa, Bill Gates is killing my people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just fascinating how they have marketed this as some sort of science or medical procedure or whatever that's going to help us, when in fact, it's about depopulating us and killing us. What's starting to happen now? People are dying.
Yes.
People are getting sick. People are really concerned about what they did to their bodies. People don't feel right anymore. These tyrants cannot beat us if we love each other. They can't beat us if we respect each other. They can't beat us and break the bonds of that energy when we say we love each other. They cannot beat us when we hug each other. They cannot. That's too powerful, because we become the we, and then we identify who the they are. Their hubris has worked against them. They're losing because of their arrogance. They're losing because of their hatred. They're losing because they thought we were weak, when in fact we are responding to this tyranny because there's something that God placed in us when we were born for this time. And it is our job to finally break the back of tyranny so it can never come back again.
It's absolutely malevolent. That's the only conclusion you can draw when you and I have had to face this. And I'm afraid you faced this in your childhood. Now, having to come face to face with the reality that the government and as it were, the high positions people in public health don't have their interests at heart, but are willing to do things that will cost them their freedom and their health, possibly their life. That's equivalent for many people to learning that their parents don't love them. All of these implications come rushing in when I tell them that this is all fake, and worse than that, and I never would have guessed this, it's planned. I mean, it's not just opportunistic badness, coherent, long thought through. I was never a conspiracy theorist. People would struggle to believe, they don't encounter evil. I would say I haven't encountered evil until now. I'm not naive. I can look back over the 20th century and realize that it's actually quite common. There is a probably a relatively small group of people who driving, who have planned this and are driving this. But here's the thing, there are, I'm afraid, a large number of people who are weak. Yes. And they won't say anything. They won't say anything. I think there's a small number of genuinely evil planners and doers. And then I'm afraid there's like 5% of people who are just utterly disgustingly cowardly and they won't say anything. And I've got to say to you folks, Vera can't save you. I can't save you. Can't save myself. Yes. But you can, the collective you can.
Yes.
If each of you who've received these messages today, just do one thing. Do what you can with what you've understood. Don't, you know, just be yourself. And all I'm asking you to do is throw seeds of doubt into the minds of people around you, because it is a lie. It's going in a very bad direction. And I do think it will cost us our freedom, cost you your freedom and your children and possibly your lives. It doesn't take many. I don't think it takes more than 10% of us speaking out at the same time. And it would all be over. This is the terrifying part for you. And I know that these are steps to tyranny, and that tyranny never goes away or stops if you just acquiesce. Never, ever, ever in history. It keeps coming until it crushes the bones under it, and it'll keep going. It won't stop. So the thing is, we don't need to do dramatic stuff now. If enough of us say, you know, if enough of us call out the bullshit, for the BS of this, it would fall apart. Yeah. But if we don't, what we will find, I think it will get worse. And then I'm afraid we know what they're going to do next, because they've told us. So I would say, don't disregard people telling you what they're going to do. They've told us they want to introduce central bank digital currencies. That's cashless digital money. But if there's no cash and everything's digital, I can assure you the big computer in the sky knows exactly what you are about to buy, from whom, where, and if they don't want you to, the algorithm will deny you. It won't be personal. They won't need to look over your shoulder. If they say, look, you're not allowed to be more than 5 miles from your home, and you're 5.5 miles from your home and you try and buy a pizza, I'm sorry, the algorithm will say you're not permitted to buy it. And if you think that's funny or not in any way serious, then you should give some thought to that. You know, if you're Tony Blair, I'll let you spend anything anywhere. He's still on the system. You can spend anything anywhere. Might even not allowed out of his apartment. If you let the executive get rid of cash and replace it with, as it were, computer-based, geolocated digital money, it is the end of human freedom forever. It's also the end of politics. So if you think you can campaign and say, if you know, they won't let you have a vote, but let's say there was a vote, they won't let you campaign and be effective. They're just, that's what's happening in China right now. They turn people's vaccine passports red. They literally grab them, click, click, and they change them to red. Those people, literally, they can't leave their apartment building. They can't get into a train because they have to use their mandatory digital ID to move around. That's what vaccine passports are. They are a rehearsal for mandatory digital ID. You will have to carry digital ID at all times so that the machine, whatever, Skynet, knows where you are at every moment. So you have no freedom. You can't actually decide on your own rights to be anywhere or do anything ever again. The worst part is you can't oppose it. You can't vote it out. You can't campaign around it. You can't turn it off. Don't let it happen. I think it's really close, really close now.
Why I met Julian is that I was always against this government restrictions that they brought us, wearing a mask and this and I was against that. Actually, I just got today a letter that my two court cases are now closed, because I was on demonstrations. In one case, I was not wearing the correct mask. In other case, they tried to say that I was insulting the police. If you disagree, you are a Nazi, you are a criminal, you are a terrorist, everything. The mask doesn't help, and the vaccine doesn't help at all. I think the vaccine is killing people. But if they really bring up this October till Easter mask mandates and so on, maybe a lot of people will wake up. And when they have to get their fourth or their fifth vaccine, and more people have this side effects, they will maybe understand, and maybe I don't get the next one. In the worldwide health systems, that this mRNA vaccines can be used for anything, and they right. change a little bit on the computer, but the basic thing is this genetic transformation, and they want us to be transhuman. I would fight until I die. I will not get this vaccine, not at all.
Christian, I met him first time at a demonstration against the corona politic in our region. My relationships to the resistance people of the White Rose is that my mother was the eldest sister of Hans Scholl and Sophie Scholl, and they were at the first time, at the beginning of the Nazi dictatorship, they were fans of Hitler. They were emphasized they go to the Hitlerjugend, and they were local leaders in the Hitlerjugend. And then they began to make questions: why are we not allowed to read books? These books, Stefan Zweig, for example, mm-hmm. and why are we not allowed to sing a Russian song we love so much, or and so on, and so a kind of doubt. And then the resistance began. They met other students who also have doubts against the Nazi regime. My uncle Hans Scholl and Alexander Schmorell decided to produce flyers, anonymous flyers against anonymous distributed flyers against the Nazi regime. At the university, one morning, a man saw them and called the leader of the university and the Gestapo, and so they were brought to the police, to the Gestapo. The chief of the so-called Volksgerichtshof went to Munich and said they have to die, they have to be beheaded. My mother and my father and my uncle told me many things about this people and the White Rose. My mother wrote the book The White Rose. She published in May of 1952 about this resistance group. So I learned much about political systems from the parents. It's a struggle about what is political heritage of the White Rose. When I go to these demonstrations and talk as the nephew of Sophie Scholl, we have some former concentration camps do not allow that workers there or scientists there also go to the demonstrations for the human rights. We have about 20 million German people who are official not vaccinated. This is about a quarter of the German population. And it is more people than the biggest party of the German government. No? The movement against the vaccination is more stronger. Yeah? 2 years ago, a new journal appeared called Democratic Resistance. One of the writers there is his historical scientist, Hermann Ploppaar, and he wrote some years ago a book about eugenics in the USA and the connections to the Nazi Party, and very interesting, and also to the connections financial and so on. You realize that is a great psychological theme, yeah? Also the whole Second World War. Yes. 2020, two big demonstrations in Berlin, 200,000 or 300,000 people. Robert F. Kennedy with the speech, the official TV talk, no word about this speech. Some 100,000 people are there on the streets. They heard him. Yeah, came home and said, oh, you did a great speech. This was information without the official media. Robert F. Kennedy said in his speech in Berlin that the Nazi leader Hermann Göring was asked at the Nuremberg trial, why are you so successful in Germany with this? And Hermann Göring said, the trick is to make the people afraid. The Nazi propaganda minister, Dr. Joseph Goebbels, he said that the Jews are a kind of sickness. Rhetoric trick is nearly the same there and now today in the newspapers. Yeah.
I come from generations of clerics. My grandfather was a bishop. My dad was a bishop. But also my grandparents were also Jewish people. And so I'm an African American Jewish person. and that part of my life I'm inextricably connected to. And so I'm overtly aware of both sides of my upbringing. I went to Seder's growing up, and I can't count the amount of bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs that I've gone to in my life. And then even to this very day, I'm very, very close to the Hasidic Jewish community in Brooklyn and in Massachusetts. And so I know my roots, and I think that that's one of the biggest things that a person needs to have is a knowledge of origin, a knowledge of beginnings. If you have no beginning, you may have a very drastic ending. And so I know where I started and where I came from. It's man's greed and it's man's lust for power are why people suffer, period. And I think that could be, you know, the summary for why we deal with some of the most negative circumstances in the world. To be silent is to consent. And so when you talk about the Holocaust and some of the takeaways from the Holocaust, one of them being that the silence was dangerous, it was treacherous. I've been driven always to say something, to do something, to make a statement, to take necessary actions so that I won't at one point in my life say, you know, I wish I did this. I wish I said this. I could have saved that life, but I didn't do anything about it. I don't want that to be the epitaph on my gravestone. I want it to be that, you know, he took action. You know, if nothing else, he took action. Fast forward to this moment today, my every waking moment is really obsessed with saving lives. One of my favorite abolitionists of all time is Harriet Tubman. I love her. And she said, I freed thousands of slaves. And then she said, I could have freed thousands more if only they knew they were slaves. That's a powerful statement because I believe that that's where we are today. We are in a moment in time where people don't even know what's going on. They're in gross denial. They don't even connect the dots to one another. They are completely, just ignoring the glaring signs of what's happening in society. Even with the propaganda, the average person today would not understand how much of a direct parallel what we're going through today as what we dealt with, you know, back in the 30s and 40s. And that's kind of scary because if we only paid attention to what happened then, we could avert what's happening now. This is really the same movie on a different day. Their position is a position of godlessness. Their position is a position of egomaniacal, psychotic, driven actions. What concerns me more than their actions is the inaction of the people. Because like I said, that, you know, how can anyone be so blinded as to just sit back and act like everything is normal, where people are saying, I'm so glad things are getting back to normal. I hear people say that, and it bothers me when I hear that, because I'm saying, wow, this is exactly what they want you all to believe, that things are getting back to normal. This is just like cancer in remission. It's just like cancer in remission, ready to come back even stronger, because we never, during that remission period, we've never done the work to eradicate the body of the cancer. Normal should never have been decided by the people that made it abnormal in the first place. So to say it's getting back to normal and to not address the fact that it became abnormal for a reason, and we've never ever dealt with the reason. Why did it become abnormal to begin with? We're not asking any questions, and that's exactly where they want us. They want us to be beyond even socially distant. They want us to distance ourselves from knowledge, to be obedient to an entity that have never made any investment in me is a completely ridiculous concept. And I see the same concept back in the day with, you know, during the Holocaust, complete and total submission to the authorities was what they called for. But no one will ask the question, why do I need to submit to you? Why? Education has now become a tool weaponized for the control of people. I've never even seen, at least in my lifetime, a medical procedure marketed this way. You know what I'm saying? Billboards everywhere, commercials, internet spots, you know, on the side of buses, driving down the street and subways, you just see advertising everywhere. When you have to advertise and advertise and advertise and convince and force and then pay off celebrities to say this is great, and the newscasters to say this is great, something's very scarily wrong with that picture, because it shows that there is coercion. I need a person to wake up and now join the forces to stand against tyranny. The evil is great. It's great. And there are so few that will stand against that evil. It's a sacred moment, even in what we're doing right now, because we're exercising something that is a God-given right. We have the right to speak, the right to express ourselves, but we're being told that we don't have that right. We're being told we have to do what everyone else is telling us to do. And I'm trying to understand why anyone would believe that notion. The precious Jewish people, how are many of them letting this happen again when the writing is on the wall? Yeah. And they're very, very clear. How are they letting this happen again?
World Economic Forum is an expression. It's an expression of the kind of people who want to design and transform the world to have it their way. Yeah. You know, basically, it's that group. The people who are in the driving seat of the WEF, they're the ones. Very rich people, people who are used to being in charge. Historically, they'd have been the ones that they were in charge of a hilltop fort. And you did what they told you, or they kill you. Individuals with that kind of mental belief, they should be in charge of everything, and everyone else is pretty much cattle. And you know what? I don't think they think the world needs 7.8 billion people. It's not an accident that a large proportion of the people in the group I've just described have talked endlessly about, you know, wringing their hands about overpopulation, as if they care. You know, why do they care about that? They've got a lovely life. They can be where they like, with who they like, with whatever toys they like, and have whatever food they like. Why are they interested in population? And I think it's because they want to reduce it, don't you? They can kill you too. For example, they might say, your vaccine passport is out of date because of a new variant. You need to turn up by Friday week. If you don't turn up by Friday week, your payment method will go off. And if you don't turn up a week later, you will not be able to leave your apartment. So, and if that vaccine was, say, a genetic vaccine, like the ones we've seen used here, and if that shuts your liver down in 9 months, I could design that as well. I promise, I promise you. I can put repressors and promoter genes in that, quite short pieces. So it looked very similar. It looked very similar to the ones you've got already. So you would not be able to tell. Even people making it would not be able to tell this is not a, a vaccine against the variants. But I could insert a piece that will, that will either shut your kidneys down, give you liver cancer, cause you to go blind, anything you like. I promise you that biotechnology is very powerful, and like most things, it's probably between 10 and 100 times easier to hurt you than to fix you. Why do you think they used genetic vaccines when they've never been used before? Because they've got another intended purpose. It, it's not surprising that foreign genetic material is toxic to you, and yet they've managed to put a cloak of lipid nanoparticles around, you know, the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, and they slide into your cells without you quite seeing them. It's a sneaky, like stealth technology. But again, it's like, why would you even use genetic technology to provide theoretically some rehearsed immunity against a respiratory virus? Why would you do that, given there are more conventional ways to do it? And I think the answer is they have other purposes intended for that technology. I wish that wasn't true, but I've just told you several of them. And there's no other plausible, there's no other plausible explanation. You can't just pick it up, no one knows what it does, make billions of doses and whack it into 4 billion arms. You think that's a responsible thing to do? No, no, it isn't. And no sensible person would do it. The whole thing is a crime. Any one of those things. I always say to people, what's the right number of times that public health should lie to you in ways that could cost you your life? Zero.
That's right.
So if they lie to you once, right, they're criminals. And I've just told you about 9 different lies. Zero is the right number. Now, they might be mistaken sometimes. We make mistakes. But the number of times they would knowingly tell you things that could damage your health, that's zero, isn't it? And if they do it once, they're evil people. You should not pay attention to them. You should point it out to everybody around you. What's the consequence of knowing what's going on is wrong and saying nothing? The answer is catastrophe. You will lose your freedom. Me too. And our children, and our grandchildren, and there'll be no recovery. And they may murder you as well. And even if they don't, you will have lost your freedom forever. Can please consider the downside of knowing it's wrong and saying nothing, because I think it's so ghastly. You must feel obliged to speak out. Please, please, please. James, Matai, Mene, honestly, you alone, you three alone, with a couple of colleagues each, you could change the course of human history. And you're not going to get a golden ticket. They may have told you you're going to get a golden ticket. You're probably more likely to get a bullet in the back of your head in a year or two, because you could expose it. So if you don't speak out now, they'll probably kill you later. I'm absolutely dead serious. We can't save you. There's no cavalry. People say, oh, won't there be legal cases? Give me a break. The people who have planned this takedown, as Catherine Austin Fitz calls it, they've planned meticulously. They probably anticipated one crazy guy from the pharmaceutical industry. And the way they're handling it, censorship, smearing, you see. So people might think, well, why haven't they murdered Mike Evenitz? They don't need to. They don't need to be very medieval. They just, they, have you seen my Wikipedia page? It's absolutely foul.
Yes.
I'm almost none of those things, by the way, but I don't care. But that's what they do. You can find probably 50 hours of me talking. See how much you can find of Sir Patrick Vallance, the chief scientific advisor for Britain, but you can't find him having Q&A with anybody on all of the areas of this whole crisis and the response to it. Why not? And it's because he's lying, right? That's because he's lying. He should sue me as well, but he won't, because he's not got the courage to do it. Because if he sues me, I will get discovery and he will lose. The truth does not mind being challenged.
Right.
The lie cannot bear being questioned.
Nicht kein Ulas, die Geist im letzten Weg. Chod Himmeln bleien wir, verstellen bläue Krieg. Wa kimmen wird noch in sein Reus gebänkt, so. Es wird ab heute an unser Trott, wir senden du. Kimmen wird noch in sein Reus gebänkt, so. Es wird ab heute an unser Trott, wir senden du. Grünen Palmenland bis weißen Land für Schnee. Wir kommen um mit unser Pein, mit unser Weh. In Wies gefallen ist der Spritz für unser Blied. Spotzen wird dort unser Gewehre, unser Miet. In Wies gefallen ist der Spritz für unser Blied. Spotzen wird dort unser Gewehre, unser Miet. Zweck die Morgen sind bei Gilden ins dem Heind. In der Nächten wird verschwinden mit dem Feind. Nur heut versammeln wird die singende Ajo. Wie ein Parol soll sein das Lied von dort zu dort. Nur heut versammeln wird die singende Ajo. Wie ein Parol soll sein das Lied von dort zu dort. Das Lied geschrieben ist mit Blut und nicht mit Blei. Sie nicht kein Lied für ein Feuge läuft da frei. Du sollt Erfolg zwischen Fahnen und die gewinnt. Das Lied gesingen mit Naganes in die Hand. Du sollt Erfolg zwischen Fahnen und die gewinnt. Das Lied gesingen mit Naganes in die Hand. Da sucht nicht kein Mulas die Geist im letzten Weg. Gott Himmel in Reine, Verstern, Bläue Weg. Weil Kimmen wird noch in sein Reus gebringt. Es wird auf heute an unser Trott, wir senden nur. Kimmen wird noch in sein Reus gebringt. Es wird auf heute an unser Trott, wir senden nur.